Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. Thanks for checking out this podcast from Connecting Faith. You can hear the show live each weekday at noon Central Time, and there are many more podcasts for this and all our Faith Radio shows available online. Our web address is myfaithradio.com. And thanks for your gifts to this listener-supported ministry. Enjoy the podcast.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting Faith with Life.
Welcome to Connecting Faith and happy Valentine's Day. I hope you're finding something sweet to do with your sweetie today. I'm Joe Rathmanner and you're listening to Connecting Faith. You know, I get three Valentine's Day. I have a husband and two boys. And when they were asked last night, who was going to be their Valentine, both of them opted for mom. And I think this was not because they loved me or any, I mean, I know they do, but they just don't want to admit to their dad that they might actually have a special girl as their Valentine. So I've decided I'm going to kind of take that one to the bank because with one son on the brink of being a teen, I know that this will not last for long. In fact, by next year, he may have his own Valentine. So I'm hoping for some sweet treats from my boys this evening. And we get to share some chocolates together, I'm guessing. Well, I was doing some research, and did you know that 2.2 million couples get married in the United States every year? Nearly 10% of those get engaged on Valentine's Day. It's very popular and very romantic for a day to propose. So a lot of planning usually goes into that proposal, but how do we make it memorable and special? And then a lot of planning goes into the wedding. There's guests, there's a venue, there's flowers, food, dress, tuxedos. There's all of these things to plan for. Well, today we're going to take some time to talk about the planning that should happen before the proposal ever even happens. Discussions that should probably take place on issues like compatibility or kids, family, maturity, and even money management. And from the more detailed to even what seems like a simple discussion, like, do we have a strong friendship? Are we going to tackle all of these issues together? So let me introduce you to my guest for today, and we will get the show started. Bill and Pam Farrell are relationship specialists who help people discover how to be love wise. They are international speakers and authors with over 35 books, including the best-selling Men Are Like Waffles, Women Are Like Spaghetti. They've also written books like Red Hot Monogamy, Why Men and Women Act the Way They Do, and The 10 Best Decisions a Single Mom Can Make. So just a wealth of information for us today. Bill and Pam are frequent guests on radio and television, and their writing has appeared in numerous magazines and newspapers. Their books have been translated in over 16 languages, and their latest book, The Before You Marry Book of Questions, is our subject for today. Bill and Pam have been married for 34 years. They're parents to three children, two daughters-in-laws, and three granddaughters. They make their home in San Diego, California, which makes me a little jealous right now. Welcome, Bill and Pam.
Hi. Hey, it's great to be anywhere that loves talking about today, huh?
Yeah. And if it makes you feel any better, Joe, we're actually sitting in Canada, where I jokingly say we're in the Arctic time zone.
Oh, yay. Well, then you can feel my pain a little bit. But it's just all the more reason to snuggle up next to that Valentine today.
That's right. Cozy up.
Yes. Well, you've written so much on relationships between men and women. I loved your concept about men being like waffles, women being like spaghetti. It helped me explain so much to my sweetie. But what about today's culture kind of tipped you off for the need for this book about questions you should ask before you get married?
Well, now more divorces are happening earlier in a marriage. It's really sad. You know, about one-fourth of all marriages will end before year five. And so it's pretty sad that marriages are ending before they even get off the ground. And a lot of times it has to do with decisions and choices that happen before a couple ever says, I do. And then when our own kids, we have two of them are married now. When they went through the process of, is this the one, it became very personal to us.
And we know, Joe, that one of the hardest experiences in life is to have a marriage that doesn't work out. And so we just really want people to be successful because we know a lot of people are like us when they first meet and they start dating, they came from homes that shouldn't be repeated or they came from homes that didn't deal with these issues. And so they get together. And like when Pam and I were first together, I realized, wow, I love Jesus. and I love Pam, and I have no idea what I'm doing. And so we used to actually corner couples at church. Like, we would look for couples at church that looked like they still liked each other.
You know, a little bit of gray hair, but they're still arm in arm or hugging in church.
And we would corner them, and I would look at the guy, and I'd say, "You look like you're in love with her. Is this real?" And if he said yes, I would say, "How did you do it?" And that usually meant an invitation to lunch, because they felt awkward just being cornered there at church and having to answer this question. So we would go to lunch, and over lunch I'd ask them all kinds of questions about how, like, what do you do every day that makes your relationship work? And what have you said and done that you would never do again because it wasn't a good idea the first time? And what habits should we develop in our life in order to be successful as a couple? And we found out that a lot of really normal couples had some great advice, but they didn't know how to share it.
Right. And, you know, for us, you know, as a young newlywed couple, struggling college students, it was kind of a two-for-one deal. We got great advice and great lunch. So it's a wonderful model, you know, to take a young couple out. And, you know, that young couple that's just in love but hasn't proposed yet, they have lots of questions and hardly any answers.
And we know there's a whole lot of people out there that are desperately hoping their love is just magical and will overlook all the obstacles. But in reality, the more skilled you are, the more successful you are.
And as I was reading, I've been married for 15 years, but there were still some questions in there that I thought would be useful for people who are already married, just to kind of get some conversations out in the open that maybe you haven't talked about. Is that part of the intent for the book as well?
You know, we are finding that as a kind of a little sidebar. A lot of parents are, you know, buying it for their college students and their young adults, and then they're using some of the worksheets and some of the activities themselves, because we designed this premarital book with all of the great relationship tools we use for all marriages, and we made it so it's fun. So in the Before You Marry book of questions, we have it so it's set up as little dates, and there's dates to decide, and there's dinner and dialogue questions, and there's questions to ask over coffee, and little worksheets for men and women, and then you discuss them. And so we write a little bit, and then we encourage the couple to, you know, go on a date and dialogue and discuss and interact in fun and meaningful ways. And so couples of all ages will always like that.
So, Joe, to your point, one of the keys to a long-term marriage is a strong friendship. And if a couple early on develops that strong friendship, that's going to help them a whole lot. But marriage changes about every 7 years, and so you get to reinstitute your friendship. And so, like, I know one of the things Pam and I have discovered recently since our kids are older is we've rediscovered how to play together. And we often go kayaking together, and we've seen some great places just from the from sitting on the water in a kayak, and we build new memories together, which have strengthened our relationship.
Well, and I loved that when you say that marriage changes every 7 years, it seems like when I was reading this section on what are the activities that you like to do either on your own or with your significant other, that that kind of changes as well. As you have kids or you your job changes or your commitments change, there may be some things that you like to do on your own now instead of together, or vice versa, or some activities that maybe you've taken up recently. Maybe you didn't know how to kayak when you were 20, but now that you're 45, kayaking is awesome. And so these conversations can continue with adults, with married couples who have been married for a significant time, and you'll still see some benefits of it.
Exactly. And I think the key part of the Before You Marry, you know, book of questions, having those interactives that are a part of the book, is it's the pattern of taking time to say, what do you think? What do I think? How can we compromise? What things are we going to do independently and be okay with? What things are we going to do always as a couple and protect? And so it's really the pattern of dialoguing and deciding that we're layering into this new love.
Well, and of course, you bring in scripture in so many places in the book and in all that you write. How is God a powerful advocate for marriage?
Well, we sign all of our books, "We love because God first loved us." And God is the source of love. He created love. And so who better to understand how love should work than the God who created love? And also, God created the person that you are in love with, And so he knows everything about him or her. And so the Holy Spirit is a wonderful, we like to call the Holy Spirit a great decoder. He can clue you in on how to romance the person that you love, because God designed that person.
And all I can say, Joe, is I'm glad God's interested in relationships, because I've been trying to understand Pam now for 34 years, and I'm no closer today than I was when I started. But
you'd be bored if you already knew all the answers, right?
Exactly.
And I find it in my relationship with God. God keeps giving me insight in how to love Pam, even though she's still so different than I am, that I can't really dial into it to how to explain her, but I can love her because God gives me the skill.
Sure. And if you didn't take that time to be asking these questions, if he gave you all of those answers from the get-go, then you wouldn't develop the relationship that you have, right?
That's right. Because part of the process of love is having it mature over the years. So like when love is new, it's just fun. It's fascinating. It's like a discovery every day of new things. God even gives a chemical jump start to relationships. So the first couple years of a relationship is just exciting and almost intoxicating.
You like, explain how that works then.
Well, there's a chemical that's referred to just generally as PEA that gets released in the brain when you first fall in love. And it is this, it has an intoxicating effect. So it makes the person look better, sound better. You tend to overlook flaws. You have less inhibition in expressing your emotions to that person.
Wow, is that for sale in the open market? Because I need some.
And it's obvious that God gave it to jumpstart the relationship, because it lasts somewhere between 18 months and 24 months.
And when it's gone,
it's gone.
Oh,
and then what happens after that is couples who develop strong habits in their life, they produce oxytocin over and over and over again, which is a long-term chemical bonding agent. So you don't get to reinstitute PEA and be intoxicated with each other, but you do get to, if you want to, have the experiences together that keep developing oxytocin, which keeps you in love long term.
And for married couples, some of those experiences would include, you know, resolving conflict together because it's a shared memory with a positive outcome. Red hot monogamy is a bonding, releases bonding agents, and laughing together. So there are lots of ways, having children, there's lots of ways to keep layering in that oxytocin, that bonding chemical. Now, the thing that young adults should realize, you know, that this bonding chemical, oxytocin, was made to help us stay in love for a lifetime. PEA was designed by God to kick off a new relationship and give it a good jet start.
Mm-hmm.
But it's being misused in our society right now. And in the book Hooked, you know, the doctors explain there how people meet, they fall in love, they have sex outside of marriage, and then things don't work out, and so they break up. And so then they start falling in love with the process of falling in love. They don't really love the person. They just love the feeling they get in new love, which is dangerous, because then when you enter marriage, a lot of young people today, their minds are patterned to have this exhilarating start and then, hey, opt out the back door after a short amount of time. And so that is something that those getting married today need to realize and factor in. What has my past been, and how might I need to deal with this past and make some new choices and new patterns that would go more along with how God designed us to love?
So a lot of couples will break up and say, well, we just weren't compatible. So let's talk about compatibility. You write about it a bit. It's a bit of a buzzword. And I'm wondering, what determines compatibility?
You know, it's amazing. Compatibility is really that friendship. The number one indicator for long-lasting love is how good a friend you are. And we often give a lot of credit to romance or that spark, that sizzle, but it's really the buddy up, do I like to hang out with you all day long? Can I sit in a room with you and be quiet and be content? And so compatibility, it's really, it doesn't mean that you are both identical twins. It just means, do we fit together? Bill likes to quote his favorite theologian.
That's Rocky Balboa. He was dating Adrian in the movie, and Adrian's brother Paulie was concerned about the relationship, and so he approached Rocky one day and said, "What are you doing with my sister?" And Rocky's response was something like, "I got gaps, she got gaps, together we fill gaps," which is actually pretty good relationship advice because all of us have gaps in our life, and God puts us in relationship with other people to help fill in some of those gaps.
And so we have those couples as they're headed towards marriage and couples in marriage really understand how we're motivated and how we're wired by God. Because we all have different motivations, and there's four basic different motivations in life. We'll call them lover number one, two, and three, four today. There's that knight in shining armor that Gary Smalley, John Trent describe as a lion, you know, natural leader kind of person. And so in the area of romance, pretty much anything they think is a good idea is romantic to them because they thought it up.
Sure.
So that's how they're wired. And then the second is that hopeless romantic. That person is all about human drama, and you know this. They're like the otter, the fun person in the room. Keyword with them is people, party. They're like a party ready to happen, popular time kind of folks. And so they're all about the people. And so if you want to romance that kind of person, you're going to want to do some public attention with them. For example, if Bill wanted to romance me, you know, he would rent out a big stadium, you know, the Chargers play, and he put me on the 50-yard line and fill up that stadium with my best friends, and then he'd sing to me on the 50-yard line. Yeah?
Wow.
Yeah.
Romantic.
I'm shameless.
Later
when
today.
When it comes to loving you. Yeah.
Yeah. And then the third kind of lover is the...
That's the wind beneath my wings. So this is just the introverted, people-oriented individual, loves being around people, loves to hear people's stories, is very relaxed and easygoing.
Keyword peace, peaceful.
And they just like to be romanced by getting along. They don't really care what you do. They just want to be accepted for who they are, and they want to get along with you doing whatever you want to do.
So if you ask this person, you know, on Valentine's, what would you like to do? They're probably going to say,
I don't care.
What would you like to do? They heard this totally good with whatever you plan. They just want to be with you. That's the key part of that motivation style. And then the last one.
The last one is the true blue lover. And these are the introverted, task-oriented people, and they're motivated by accuracy. Like, for them, there is a right way to do Valentine's Day. There's a right way to do love. There's a right way to reach their heart, and they want you to do it the right way.
It's all about the process, and they're really into details. And so, like, we have this set of friends who both are wired this lover number four way. And when he proposed... He had collected. They had dated for 7 years because these people tend to not be in a hurry. They want to make sure everything's done right. And so when he proposed, he took this scrapbook that he had collected, something from every date they'd ever been on for 7 years, and he wrote his feelings about, you know, their date that night, and it could be the menu from that, or it could be a rose that was pressed and kept. It was thick. It was like huge encyclopedia thick. But that guy, romance points for probably the next 7 years the guy got for doing that.
That is a big deal. That's a big commitment.
Lots
huge of planning.
Mm-hmm.
Well, maybe you have something planned for Valentine's Day, and or maybe you're looking for some tips. Stay with us. We're going to take a quick break, and then we're back with Bill and Pam Farrell. They're the authors of the Before You Marry Book of Questions. So we'll be talking about what are some questions that you could be asking your significant other that you're considering marrying. And then we could actually talk about also parenting, some other areas that we should talk about before we make that commitment. We'll be back in just a minute.
Your support of Faith Radio makes a difference every day of the year, and we're thankful. When you make an ongoing gift of $15 a month or more, we'll send you our exclusive 2014 Faith Radio calendar as a way to say thanks in a very special, tangible way. This full-color 12-month calendar contains stunning images from around the Upper Midwest. So visit myfaithradio.com/support to give your gift today. Your gift helps change lives all across the Midwest. Thanks.
Hi, I'm Dick Whitmer, General Manager of Faith Radio. You and I both know that living for Jesus is a lifelong journey. And we're committed to helping you connect faith to life with access when you need it. And to help you keep your faith strong throughout the day, we'd like to send you a Live by Faith wristband. It's free. Wear it each day as a reminder that you're on a journey of faith. If you would like your free wristband, visit myfaithradio.com to request yours. We'll get it out to you as soon as possible.
Welcome back to Connecting Faith. I'm Joe Rathmanner, and today we're talking with Bill and Pam Farrell, and we're talking about the Before You Marry Book of Questions, a book that talks about maybe some of the conversations we should have with our significant other before we get married. And we've been talking about different kinds of people and what makes them tick. I'd also like Bill and Pam to just talk about some areas that are important for couples to be on the same page about, and how do they find out if they're on the same page?
You know, there's some critical things that really matter, especially when you think about compatibility. You're really wanting to have your morals and your values be what's compatible. How you view life. What does integrity mean to you? What does honesty look like? What does authenticity look like? How about the socioeconomic level of life do you feel like is successful? What is success anyway? Is it a peaceful environment? Is it security with a little bit of money in the bank? So talking through those really important issues, and then parenting, like what's your view on children? Do you want children? How do you raise children? And so, I mean, the things people usually argue about would be money, kids, and sex. And so those are definitely the things you need to talk about before you say I do.
And it should be said, Joe, that the reason why we should be asking all these questions is not because we're afraid of marriage. It's because it's such a powerful relationship. Like, there's no other relationship on earth like it, because nobody else in life has access to all of you. And there isn't anybody else on earth that you make all your decisions with and connect all your life to. And so it's that they see a place in your life that nobody else sees. They see all the best of who you are, and they see all the quirks of who you are, and they see the worst of who you are. And so because of the power of the relationship, we want to make sure that we are ready for this type of a commitment, and that we have the skills to help us navigate through. And so it's really a privilege to be in this kind of a relationship. And anything else in life that was this powerful, you would get training for. So if you were going to drive a race car, you would get training to do it. If you were going to fly a plane, you would get training to do it. And so this kind of relationship, because it's so good for us, and it reaches a place in our life that is so strong and so deep, we need to go into it asking some honest questions. Do we have what it takes to be a successful couple? If we do, let's celebrate and get after it. And if we don't, let's free one another up to find that person that we can be successful with.
So tell our listeners how you've kind of outlined this book to help these conversations start taking place.
Definitely. You know, we want people to interact over the most important conversations, and including, you know, compatibility issues that we've mentioned. How about how we're going to manage our relationship during these dating days? Because there's choices that we can make that will either add to our love or raise a possibility that we'll never even make it to the altar. And so the way we handle how far we go in our intimate life before we say I do, God has a plan for that. And that plan is to give you a future and a hope. And So he said, protect the gift of sexuality until marriage. And so we walk a couple through, like, how does that look and how do we do that and why would we do it and what if we didn't do it, then now what? And so we walk them through those kind of questions. And we definitely spend a lot of time on family of origin issues because there is a lot. It's not just two people that marry. It's two families that get married.
Well, we're talking today with Bill and Pam Farrell. The book is The Before You Marry Book of Questions on this Valentine's Day. We're talking about love, how to make our relationship stronger. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back on Connecting Faith. Welcome back to Connecting Faith. I'm Joe Rathmanner. Are you in love and wondering if this person is the one? Well, listen up, because today I get to talk with Bill and Pam Farrell on the Before You Marry Book of Questions. If you're already married, we have some encouragement for you and your spouse and some conversation starters to hopefully make your relationship even stronger. So great subject for this Valentine's Day. Bill and Pam, you had said that three main areas that people often have disagreements on are money, kids, and sex. So in this book, you discourage cohabitation and sex before marriage, which is kind of countercultural these days. Why is this so important?
It's not kind of countercultural. It's really countercultural.
I was trying to be kind.
Yeah. And you know, the sad part is I just feel like if people knew the statistics, they would make different choices. For example, I mean, even though it's like two-thirds of people, you know, now cohabitate before marriage, and Christian Mingle, we're a part of the Christian Mingle board, and they just released a study about singleness and how people view sexuality, and It's really kind of sad. Only 11% of all singles believe that waiting until after the I do is a good idea. And what's really sad is that about 80% of couples that live together describe their relationship as, quote, on the rocks. And the majority of people that live together won't ever make it to the altar. And those who do tie the knot, they're over twice as likely to divorce, and divorces within the first 5 years. And so there's just a lot of heartbreak, and we haven't even talked about, you know, sexually transmitted diseases and the fact that you're patterning your relationship to disobey God instead of obey God, you know, because God tells us really clearly to avoid sexual immorality in Thessalonians. And so he does it because he wants to protect people's hearts and their lives and their health. But nowadays people just don't want to hear that. And but I think if they thought about the long term, do I want a long term love, not just like, woo, right now, on one day for one moment, but do I want every day to wake up next to a person and just be totally madly in love with them and have red hot romance for the rest of our lives? There might be some different decisions that are made, ones that would protect that gift of sexuality and the gift of giving each other the very best of who you are, because it goes to the core of who we are, that area of sexuality. And so if we give it away easily, it's like we give away parts of ourself in every relationship. And there's just a lot of healing that needs to be done if that's the case. And God just wants to protect our hearts.
It almost seems that I've often wondered if the argument could be made if someone said, well, I don't believe in God, or I'm not a Christ follower, I don't follow what he says. But you could still make the argument that says sexual involvement does complicate a couple's ability to sustain that love that they have for each other because of the heart damage and the physical damage, the health damage, and the mental and emotional instability that it breeds within a relationship.
Exactly. And for those young adults or those who are dating or older, but that are trying to weigh out whether this relationship is, quote, the one, and you're thinking about, do I want to marry that person? Well, all the studies say that when you are sexually active with somebody and it makes you feel like you're in love with them, and sometimes it clouds your judgment, like a lot of times can cloud your judgment. And so you don't see the flaws. And that's why oftentimes we'll get the dynamic where there's this couple and they're just like totally madly in love with each other, but nobody in their family thinks they're good. None of their friends think they're good for each other. You know, their coworkers don't think they're good for each other. And part of the reason why is that the area of hormones are being, lit up, and so they're just not thinking straight, literally, because of their sexual involvement. It clouds judgment. And so if you're really trying to weigh out whether this is the one, hey, push pause on how you handle your sex life and give your mind a chance to clear and look at a whole person and all of their life and, their bank accounts and have they paid their taxes and, do they have a jail sentence? I mean, sometimes it's very clouded in what happens when we just only look at the physical.
We're trying to help people gain a perspective of success throughout their life, because there certainly is nothing bad about sex. Like we think it's one of the greatest gifts God gave us.
Exactly.
And intimate love is one of the greatest things to experience on earth. I mean, that's why people are in relationships, is because in their heart they want to be treasured by somebody, they want to be valued by somebody, they want to believe that somebody on earth sees them as the greatest person that's ever been born. And so we understand people's desire to want to be in great relationships. And we're just trying to tell people that the best relationships are one that know how to be in love and know how to wait. Mm-hmm. And I hate to use a sports analogy, but guys tend to get sports analogies. Like we're in the middle of the Olympics right now. And if you were to look at a long-distance race, something like the 3,000-meter speed skating, you don't prepare for a 3,000-meter race by only running 500-meter races. That you have to train for long-term. It's not a sprint. It's not a short-term deal. And what we have is a whole lot of people who are thinking short-term, and we understand that, like, short-term, like, speaking from a guy's perspective, like, women are beautiful and women are awesome, and it's easy to get into relationships where I think, man, this woman is the greatest woman I've ever met. And in the short term, she may be all of that. But marriage is a long-term race. And so asking the questions, will she be a great wife 10 years from now and 20 years from now, is a different question than can we be happy today.
And when you add in someday, y'all are going to be married and down the road your 10, 12, 14-year-old son or daughter says, so why should I wait? It's easier. It's easier on you emotionally as parents if you make good choices.
And if you did make a bad choice, that could be a great opportunity to talk about why that was a bad choice.
Yeah.
So to be able to have those conversations with your children and to have God's word behind it and his intent for what marriage is and can be if we actually follow what he would like us to do as couples.
Exactly. We actually have a whole other book on that, and that's questions kids ask about sex and answers to have ready. And it's three parts. You, as parents, you look up, and God heals your heart first. And then you look out at what your kids need and who else can you team with, parents, other parents, educators, youth pastors, and you team with them to help create an environment for kids to make great choices, and then you reach down to your own child and answer their questions from some great places of wisdom, scientific facts, as well as God's word.
Mm-hmm. And, the story I like to tell, especially guys in this arena, is your sex drive is like a powerful automobile. And if you want to drive a powerful, fast car, you have to learn how to do it. if you think your sex drive is just a beat up old Jeep, you can just use it and abuse it and just drive it like crazy. And the story that reminds me of this all the time is I had the opportunity to be over in Germany, and some friends of mine had a Mini Cooper sitting in their driveway. So over dinner, I said, hey, the Autobahn's not far from here. When are we going out in the Mini? And their 18-year-old son said, I'll take you out. And as we were walking out the door, his dad said to his son something I've never said to my sons. He said, no driving over 130 miles an hour. So we got on the Autobahn, and we were driving at 129 and a half miles an hour, and we were passed by two Porsches. And at first, we were, like, disappointed, like, oh, man, I want to be in that car because look at how awesome that is. But then we passed that car, one of those cars, 10 minutes later, and it was in a big heap of flames because the driver didn't respect the power of the vehicle. And what we want is for people to be able to drive fast. We want them to have great marriages. We want them to have marriages that 10 years into it, they're like, man, this is so awesome. But too often what's happening is we're misusing it, and we don't respect the power, and it turns into a big accident that leaves a lot of pain in our lives. And that's what we're trying to help people avoid.
When each relationship is going to have conflict, whether they're planning on getting married or they're married, and that seems normal, inevitable, are there right and wrong ways to deal with that?
Definitely right and wrong ways to deal with conflict. And that's why it's important to decide as a couple, you know, how are we going to manage conflict? And sometimes it's creative, too. We always encourage, one of the things that we suggest to young couples and those who are looking towards marriage or remarriage, you know, blended families, is to get a mentor. Get mentor couples who are further along on the road of love than you are. And one of those mentor couples that we had interviewed, they're both firstborn, and they come from families that have some dysfunction in their families of origin. And so when they were, you know, initially in love and supposed to be as newlyweds, they found that they said things they ought not to say and behaved in ways that were not healthy and very emotional. And so I went to their house one day, and there's like bowls of little mini Snicker bars like everywhere in their house, like in their living room, in their bedroom, in their family room, in the bathroom. I saw one, you know, a little bowl in the bathroom. I'm like, what's up with the Snicker bars everywhere? And they said, when we were first married, you know, we would, you know, get in arguments, and we would say things we ought, you know, we would regret later. And so instead of the whole count to 10 thing, we just say, you want a Snickers. And the amount of time it takes to chew one of those sticky Snickers bars is the amount of time it needed for us to calm down so we could be rational again. And I thought, how creative is that?
Wow. It sounds like the commercial.
Yeah. I wish what somebody had told me early on in our relationship is that emotions follow decisions. Mm. And the reason why conflict is so challenging for couples is it's highly emotional. And so couples who decide how they're going to approach conflict tend to have conflict work for them. And when we talk about, is there a right way to approach conflict? Well, stylistically, there really isn't. Like, couples can go at it in a lot of different ways. Like, there's some couples that are real loud, and they just, you know, they find it fun to argue back and forth, and they like the volume to be high. And when it's done, they're like, woo, that was exhilarating. There's other couples that create damage when they do that. And so they need to have a more quiet approach and a more planned approach. The key is that if the couple decides how they're going to approach conflict, conflict will add value to their relationship.
Right. It doesn't have to pull you apart. Conflict can actually lead to greater understanding and deeper value of that person and making you connect at a deeper level because you're understanding more how they think, how they feel, how they're wired. And so conflict can actually be a place of discovery if you handle it well.
Because Pam brings to our relationship what I don't have. And when I have that in perspective, I value it. When I don't have it in perspective, it's one of the most irritating things to me on earth. And so because we've decided how we're going to approach conflict, our conflict usually ends with me appreciating the way she approaches life, not being irritated with the way she approaches it.
That is beautiful. Hey, Bill and Pam, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, I'd love to talk about, you have some great wisdom for those who are already planning their wedding, and also some great wisdom for those who maybe have come to the conclusion that they should maybe break off their relationship. So love to talk about that when we come back. I'm Joe Rathmanner. This is Connecting Faith, and we're talking with Bill and Pam Farrell about the Before You Marry Book of Questions. What are some questions and conversations you should have with that person before you get married? We'll be back in just a moment.
That feeling comes with a phone call you didn't expect.
That feeling as the news sinks in.
About the surprise diagnosis or the financial curveball. And in that moment, it's hard not to feel alone.
To wonder how you're going to deal with it all.
Be encouraged today. You don't have to go through it alone.
There's a whole community of friends ready to encourage you and pray for your situation. It's called PrayerWorks.
An online, completely anonymous source of inspiration and hope.
Find PrayerWorks at myfaithradio.com.
As parents, you always want to know what or whom is influencing your children. While most of us have a good handle on this in the real world, did you ever think about who could be influencing your child online? Zabra is a new way for you to protect and monitor your kids' influences while on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Zabra works 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to alert you to potentially harmful conversations on social media. For more information, visit Zabra.com. That's Zabra.com to get started today.
Welcome back to Connecting Faith. We are talking with Bill and Pam Farrell today on the Before You Marry Book of Questions. What are some conversations that you might be able to have even this Valentine's Day or this weekend with the one that you love if you're determining whether or not you are ready to get married? This book has some great wisdom, as well as Bill and Pam do, about just couples who are maybe needing to have some discussions to make their marriage even stronger. So, Bill and Pam, for those couples who are already in that process, they are planning their wedding right now. A lot of brides kind of take over a lot of the wedding planning, but you write that grooms should also get involved. Talk more about that, if you would.
Well, before we get too far into it, can I just say that in general, a wedding is a female event that men get invited to? And so the groom needs to have a certain amount of appreciation for this, that this, like his wife, his bride has probably been dreaming about this since she was a little kid. Like, I'm watching our granddaughters right now, and they dress up as princesses. They dream about relational-type things. They have a different perspective on relationships than little boys do. And so this is a big, big day for her. And so although we need to have an opinion about what we want and we need to be engaged in the conversation, we do need to realize that she has put a lot more effort into this day than we have, most likely. And so we need to approach this sensitively. And we need to approach this as an opportunity to make her feel more important than she's ever felt in her life.
Mm.
But at the same time, as men, we need to have an opinion.
Sure.
Like, you may not need to have an opinion about every detail. Like, you may be okay with whatever flowers she wants, and you may be okay with whatever dresses she wants her bridesmaids to wear. But as a man, I would encourage every man that's listening that there is something in the wedding that's important to you.
Mm-hmm.
And you should make sure that element gets into it. It may be a Bible verse that you want read. It may be a song that you want to have included. It may
be a tradition that you want that's been a part of your family, or it could be where you go on your honeymoon. So there's definitely things that the groom needs to say matter to him.
And if there isn't anything that's coming to mind today, you should sit down and pray for wisdom to come up with something.
Because he really is, he's leading. This is how he practices leading this new family. And so that's why you can't just opt out of having opinions and just
right. Show
up.
Well, and if you don't have an opinion about something, your bride's going to wonder if this day is important to you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so there has to be something that really matters to you.
And definitely set aside time. It's going to be time-consuming, the wedding planning part. And so don't think that your life can just go on as normal, whether you're the groom or the bride, it's going to take some time out of your schedule. Even if you do have a wedding planner, there's still lots of decisions that need made that only you two can make, that you don't just want to hand over. You know, I'm a mother-in-law, and we all like to be really, really helpful. And so even if you have, quote, helpful mother-in-laws that want to pitch in, you still need to decide what you want to delegate to them, not just hand over everything to your in-laws and all decisions, and you just show up at your own wedding. This is your wedding, and so it's laying the foundation for your love and your future.
Well, and I noticed that in just planning my own wedding, I'm a planner. My husband loves to have fun, so I had to just keep asking him, what is it that needs to happen for you to have fun on this day? And so he got to really help in planning what's the reception going to be all about, what is the band, who's the band that's going to play, what's going to be asked of the guests during that time, you know, will there be announcements and things, and can he partake in that? How are we going to do gifts? And so all of those really fun parts of the ceremony, he took a great interest in, but anything that required, you know, writing a list, those fit much better with me. And it was great. It was actually a great way to plan or to see how the rest of our marriage was probably going to function. If something needs to be planned that's very detail oriented, it kind of falls to me. But if we want to plan a fun outing or a fun event, then he comes up with all the ideas and I just kind of make it work.
That's a good system. See, you found the system, and that's really the important part, is every couple has a pattern, a comfort pattern in their relationship, and it's finding out what that is and then making it a well-oiled machine.
And maybe just plan a surprise birthday party sometime before you get engaged to see how that process works. It'll be a dry run before the wedding.
That's awesome. That's awesome. We actually encourage people to go through at least one full calendar year together. As a dating couple before you tie the knot, because you do. You experience birthdays, Christmas, significant weddings of your friends, family vacations, and you really get to know somebody through a course of a year like that.
Absolutely. In fact, you had mentioned the family, the extended family that you're going to be a part of. How essential is that to spend time with those people before you actually decide that you want to marry this person?
I think it's crazy not to, like, to not to do that. It's like you're walking in blind because the family created the person you're in love with, and so find out about their family.
And we can pretty well guarantee that when you go visit the family of the person you're thinking about marrying, your confidence level is going to go up. You're either going to become more confident that this relationship could work, or you're going to become more confident that this relationship is not a good idea.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And it's not just that they're healthy families. Like when Pam and I visited each other's families, we saw the dysfunction in each other's families.
Blatantly, hugely.
But it pushed us together. Like we talked at a more intense level after that, and it raised our confidence level that we could do this together.
Right. The trust went up that we're a great partnership and that God is calling us together and we could team up and maybe help reach our family and rescue our family. But together, Bill and I were stronger than together than apart. And so you don't have to have perfect families to make that discovery. And you may go home and find out that there's an amazing family. And wow, that's why he's so responsible or she's so caring. And, you know, so you'll be able to see a history of wellness and health. And that's wonderful. And it gives you confidence that we can carry this forward, this wonderful legacy of love forward together as a couple.
So another great opportunity for conversation starters.
That's right.
So what happens if a couple goes through a lot of these exercises, a lot of these conversations and decides, hey, I don't know that this is going to work. Mm-hmm. How do they come to an end for their relationship?
Well, first of all, I would say to that couple that reaches that conclusion, congratulations, because not everybody that you are attracted to is intended to be a spouse for you. And so if you discover that, you know what, we're good people, but we're not good together, that's a good thing. And in our book, we just give a quick acrostic on the word stop. So if you decide, you know what, this is a great person, they've had a great value in my life, but this is not a good idea for us to get married, The S is for just state clearly the value this person has added to your life, because they have been an important part of your journey in life.
And verbally say it, face to face, eye to eye.
Yeah, don't text them. Or put a new status on your Facebook that they you know, get surprised by. Do this one in person.
Yeah.
And the T is for tactfully handle their feelings. Like they may completely agree with you and be relieved that you both have reached this conclusion, or they may be surprised by it and they may be hurt. So you want to tactfully handle their feelings and give them freedom to express how they feel.
And then it may take a little time for them to process, and they may need to have a conversation more than once.
And the O is for openly explain the issues. If you thought this was a person you were going to marry and now you're deciding it's not, they deserve to hear why. And whether it's an issue of their own personal growth, whether it's an issue with their family.
Whether it's an issue with you and you're not relationship ready.
Yeah, or you've just decided, you know, we really are great people, but together this doesn't work. They deserve to hear why. And then the P is for prepare a new plan. What you don't want to do is go into limbo. You have to set new goals for yourself. You have to have a new activity level, because this person has taken up a significant amount of time in your life. And if you don't have a new plan to either refocus on goals or reengage in a career or find a way to get busy doing something worthwhile, it's likely you'll go into limbo and the emotions may just push you back together, even though you know the relationship doesn't have what it takes to last a lifetime.
And we encourage you to reengage your social circle, but not in a dating way.
Yeah.
You know, you need time for your heart to heal, too. So don't just, like, rebound right into another relationship. That's not fair to the other person, nor is it fair to you. Give God time to heal your heart. And kind of a rule of thumb might be 1 week for every month you've been together to process this. I definitely need to give a good quarter, half year mm-hmm. of just, hey, me and God, we're just going to go forward together.
And during that time, go do something you've always wanted to do that
yeah.
you haven't been able to do yet, to create a new memory in your life to help you with the emotional transition.
Great advice for relationships that are going strong or relationships that may be coming to an end. Well, today I've been talking with Bill and Pam Farrell. Thank you so much for joining me today. It's been a great Valentine's Day conversation, and I'm just grateful for all the wisdom that you've given our listeners. If you want to learn more about Bill and Pam or any of the books that they have written, including Men Are Like Waffles, Women Are Like Spaghetti, or Red Hot Monogamy, two of my personal favorites, we'll have a link to their website on our website at myfaithradio.com. And if you're just joining us, I hope you have a happy Valentine's Day. Enjoy some time with your loved one. You've been listening to Connecting Faith. I'm Joe Rathmanner, and have a great day.